Good afternoon. Today is Tuesday, November the 5th. Have you voted yet?
Okay. Is that a question for me?
No, that was just a contemplative one.
Okay. That's all. I just want to make sure if I was supposed to. It was one of those.
Well, yes,
those,
you are supposed to also, but.
It was one of those uncomfortable silence things you were hoping to engender, and I fouled it up. Is that?
That was something along those lines. Okay. 335th day of the new year. Joining us this afternoon, noted CPA Bill McCauley.
Hey, Brian.
You're wearing a blazer today. What's that all about?
I just black is slimming, so.
Well, then you ought to be wearing a black shirt and pants, man.
Exactly.
Yeah, you and Johnny Cash, huh?
Yeah, whatever it
okay,
takes.
Okay, maybe the trio of us.
Whatever it takes.
Yeah, well, apparently it takes a little bit more than what I got. How's that?
Maybe.
So what do you got in front of you there? Anything exciting?
There's just little oddball things going on in the world. There's, you know, the taxing world is all kind of...
A flutter?
Yes, kind of focused on the Affordable Care Act ramifications, and that's just starting to ramp up from our end. And then, of course, there's some scams and some other IRS announcements that are recent that are at least interesting to some.
We're open, and we'll find out what other announcements they had when we come back.
At my bank, I feel at home. I'm Trish Greggie of the Journey's End, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, hometown banking isn't just something they say, it's how they do business. I'm Kevin McClendon of Georgia's Glass, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, we invest in the future of our community every single day. I'm Greg Foster, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
Redwood Capital Bank, our interest is you. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 313. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Bill McCauley, but before we do, our quote this afternoon comes from Savili Tartakower.
Could you repeat that?
No. It's like the Hawaiian names, man. No chance to get a good once, unless we're week three. No chance. Yeah. Quote, victory goes to the player who makes the next to last mistake. Wait, you reflecting on that one, Damien? Yeah. My only problem is I make the next to last and the last. Oh, geez. Well, I guess some of the websites are up. What are you hearing from a tax purpose with whether it's cover blank? That would be state, folks, not an anatomical part. Uh-huh. Or with any of the enrollment programs and what folks are either trying to do or need to try to do for tax purposes, because there is certainly that, well, there at least there was, the 7% adjusted gross income, medical deduction. Is that still there?
Well, yeah, there's a bunch of this is a complicated time, and this is such a major undertaking, this Affordable Care Act, and I think we've yet to see a bunch of the unintended consequences that are going to fall as a result of it, and we're beginning to see some of the start of them. It's just you can't re-engineer this big a percentage of our economy and not have it be bumpy. And this is really, really bumpy. And we've all seen and can draw our own conclusions as to why things are bumpy and how long it's going to stay bumpy and whether it'll ever smooth out and all. You know, there's all these other conjectural things. But from a tax perspective, people are going to have to understand a number of things when they're confronted with this. Now, for those of us who have health care provided at our place of work, which I don't, so I don't know why I said for those of us, but for those, for those people who receive health care from their place of employment, there probably isn't going to be a lot of major change in terms of, you don't have to go log onto the website or try to get ready to log onto the website. I don't know where the problems were occurring.
Work through the system.
I was tempted to try to log onto the website just to see what it was like, but I didn't do it because I thought that would just make matters worse because I don't need to be on there. But from the standpoint that people are going to have to get and figure out you know, what to do and how to do it. For those of us who do, in my case, my wife has health insurance in place where she works, so we're covered from that perspective. So for those of us are not going to have a big impact, except that beginning in January, there's going to be additional taxes charged on policies, and that cost is going to go somewhere. Now, if your employer pays 100% of your cost, maybe the employer is going to continue to pay 100% of the cost. But if you're paying 20% of the cost and your employer is paying 80%, picking numbers out of the sky, your 20% is going to go up, assuming that the employer is going to pass along the additional, you know, 3.8%.
Everything stays status quo.
Yeah. So with that exception, from the standpoint that you don't have to go log on to the website and try to figure out what, you know, what policy you might need, et cetera, you know, for those of us who are in that boat, who don't have to go in and do that, life's going to be a little easier. For people who have health insurance or are uninsured, or they have an individual policy, it's a different world. And you know, we've all heard the challenges, and clearly a bunch of you know, it's very difficult. There are very, very few policies that would not have been changed. Policies change all the time, and so it's a you know, it's going to be the pretty typical for people to have had their policy changed. Maybe and it doesn't have to change much before it can no longer be offered. And so, you know, we're going to see a lot of these termination notices coming out where people are going to be told that their policy, they no longer are covered by that policy, and they're going to have to do something else. And that's when they're going to go to the exchange or call an insurance broker or whatever, trying to get insurance coverage. Now, brokers can go to the exchange on behalf of their customers, so it is possible to avoid some of that. But the other thing is the insurance brokers are really busy.
Yeah, I've not seen too many of them hanging around in the office lately.
No, they're
see them out on the road tearing up the miles. So you know, there's lots of stuff that's going on out there.
I had one kind of make a comment equating it to tax season. You know, when we're burning the candle at both ends in tax preparation business. That's a lot of what people are facing, and what's also happening to impact these employers. Is some renewal issues for existing business customers.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 3:19.
Now a minute of sunshine for Humboldt. The North Coast Repertory Theater is now celebrating its 30th season with 6 treats for Humboldt audiences. First is the George S. Kaufman Moss Hart Pulitzer Prize-winning comedy, You Can't Take It With You. Then the musical, You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown, based on the Peanuts comic strip. After the holidays, there'll be a double feature straight from ancient Greece, the murderous tragedy Oedipus the King and the comedy Women in Congress. Next is the side-splitting Complete Works of William Shakespeare, a parody in which all 17 of the Bard's plays are played in 97 minutes. Late spring features the North Coast premiere of the popular Les Miserables. The season ends with The Poor of New York, a melodrama from 1857 of the problems of a middle-class family not all that different from today's. For dates, times, and details, call 442-6278. Sunshine for Humboldt is a nonprofit civic organization dedicated to the people and events that make this a good place to live.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 3:23-ish. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Bill McCauley. Somehow, you probably don't use that phrase often, do you?
Well, our clients don't
like... It's balanced-ish.
Yeah. Our clients... Well, you know, there are times, you know, when... You know, usually I'll characterize it, okay, this is a back-of-the-napkin calculation, or, you know, this is quick and dirty or whatever, and those are ish numbers. But, and really, sometimes the cost to get closer than ish is... You know, it's not worth it.
You know? Yeah, you really need want to have that number bad.
Yes, yeah. Sometimes people are looking at it going, I just want a general idea. You know, to the nearest $5,000. You know, well, okay, that's ish. But you know, when they say I want to know, if this is going, anyway. So as you can imagine, there's a lot of calculations that get a little finer than that.
Yeah, probably don't want to use ish with percentages.
No, there can be a little what we call noise in the numbers.
Yes.
Yeah.
What is your understanding, Bill, with the costs of when it's implemented, the health care to businesses. You mentioned that there was the insurance concept of it, but I'm thinking of the overall impact. There's that, was it 3.8% of something is going to be charged. Have you seen anything that says what the something is or how that figure is going to be treated for tax purposes?
It's broken down, and it's going to be an additional charge with your insurance. So it's going to be deductible for tax purposes, in effect, as additional insurance cost. Not unlike your cell phone, where if you pay attention to your cell phone bill or any other utility you use, and you see all the little tack-ons that have been put on there.
The FCC fee, this tax, that tax, surcharge this.
So it's my understanding that once we get to January 1, that the insurance policy is going to be subject to a 3.8% tax, and that tax is going to be calculated and included as part of the premium.
And now, is the insurance going to be treated as other insurances have been, where it's a benefit, a taxable event, that then the employee is going to be taxed on?
Good question. It's still a tax-free fringe benefit, which insurance has been for a long time, and so it will continue to be. It will continue to be until somebody changes it. If they change it, it will continue to be treated in the same fashion. So what that means is that if your employer provides you insurance and the cost of the insurance is $500 a month, that $500 is not added into your W-2. You don't pay tax on it. So you're using it. It's a pre-tax benefit to the recipient. There have been a number of proposals over the years to change that and to put people on more of an even footing, to have that not be a pre-tax item. Whenever you change the tax law, there's winners and losers. And so, we can all sit and judge for ourselves whether that change, how that would affect us, and whether that's really a fair or appropriate change. There's no such thing as fair when it comes to taxation, because inevitably somebody's going to get taxed more than somebody else, and then that starts the argument. Well, is that fair? The only taxes that might be fair, and I would even argue they aren't, would be like a fuel tax, where you pay it per gallon, and then that's theoretically paying to take care of the roads. And then you can make the argument, which I like to, just because
that's a nice fable, just to the roads.
I like the intellectual argument when you see a bridge being widened and you realize, okay, that's for bicycles, and I always make the comment that they need to tax each bicycle. When you buy a new bicycle, $5,000 to pay for the road improvements, because they're not going to pay for gas tax, but they're using the same roads that the car, the gas tax on the vehicles are paying for. Anyway, that's a stupid comment. But the point is, because that's not going to happen, although I do think it's fun to play with intellectually. The point being is that these things are going to be we do get the opportunity to get that tax-free as a fringe benefit as an employee. And there is the ability, as we discussed before, about medical expenses to deduct medical insurance costs and other things, if you itemize and if you have enough medical expenses to itemize, and that depends on a couple of factors, one of them which is your income.
So has there been any discussion about changing that or an impact to that in the personal tax returns, or is that such a small little side tangent thing that it really doesn't warrant much discussion at this point?
Well, I think it's not on the table right now, but I think it's always potentially on the table. Anytime you look at any of these, any tax benefits that people derive, whether it's for mortgage interest or whether it's for payment of medical expenses or certain taxes or charitable contributions, there's always groups who are making arguments that there should be some other consideration, and that's you know, we live in a democracy, and I guess the great minds of the democracy can argue it,
and the rest of us just kind of sit back and watch. Yeah.
Yeah, we find out what it's like to be the tail being wagged by the, you know, just getting a ride on the tip of the tail.
A ride. That's interesting. Yeah. I would have used a different phrase, but that's okay.
Well,
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 3:30. We'll be back with more from Bill McCauley.
A decade of difference, making a real difference for the future of the North Coast. This is Jim Ritter with Humboldt Live in the Arcata High School Career and College Center. Do you have life and work experiences that could be a benefit to our local youth? We're recruiting community members to mentor and share ideas with our middle and high school students. Please call me at 839-5114 for more information. The Decade of Difference, making a real difference for the future of the North Coast.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 3:36. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Bill McCauley. So, Bill, you kind of teased us a little bit early on and said that you got an IRS scam. I think the only thing that we've been talking about with IRS is issues around security.
There have been a lot of those issues that have been coming up. The IRS has they've gone through some relatively recent government audits, the wrong term, but they've been testing their systems, and they've found that a few of them from a security perspective have some issues. But the good news is they're testing it, and you know, you would expect that people, you know, that people are going to find these things. So I wasn't unduly concerned about some of the cybersecurity issues.
Were you surprised that they were as prevalent or numerous?
I was not shocked that they were that. I mean, the IRS has got their computer systems are a patched up deal where they've got some old legacy systems. And anyway, that's old. And you know, I think everybody who's doing business in cyberspace has got issues. It's just whether you know it or not. And you'd expect that their system, given the type of information that they have, that it would be pretty bulletproof. But the good news is they're assessing it, and I'm sure they'll react to it and do what they need to do. And I mean, you know, the IRS, it's easy to kind of poke fun at them. But the fact is, you know, they got people there who want to do the job right, and you know, they'll take care of that. I mean, you can also, I mean, we all have heard about excesses and things that the IRS do, but you know, that's outside the norm. I mean, there's a bunch of people there who just are hardworking people like you and I, who are trying to do the best to do their job.
Well, the excesses, I don't think are as concerning. It's the access to the information.
Yeah, that's a big deal.
That all of a sudden gets folks attention. Well, you know, you spend an extra couple of bucks on a party or, you know, a jaunt here or jaunt. Okay, fine. I mean, we can beat our chest and get excited about that. But if they suddenly tap the mother load and they get into a bunch of Social Security numbers or bank account numbers.
Huge deal.
That's, a different magnitude entirely.
Huge deal. And it also comes down to some of the politics. I mean, you know, files being, you know, I mean, there we have in history been aware where files have been misused by, you know, for political purposes. And those are the kinds of things you want to be bulletproof from. Those kinds of criticisms should not be, you know, there should be no grounds to lay those kinds of claims. And, you know, I think for the most part that's probably the case. Although we did see, you know, with the exempt organization unit that
it's still possible.
It sure, you know, from everything we've seen, it looked like things were not, you know, were taken out of the system to handle them differently, and you know, that just feels wrong. And I know that's an old story, and I'm not trying to really bring it up and rehash it, but the fact is, those kinds of concerns those offend all of us. You know, I don't care which side of the aisle you're on. If the other side of the aisle is using it inappropriately, it's offensive. And so, if I don't care which side's doing it. It's wrong, and it needs, you know, that kind of stuff should never happen.
So, what is the IRS concerned about at this point?
Well, one of the big things is phone scams, and it's a new one. You know, the IRS, you know, we've talked, Brian, about issues that have come up with email and email solicitations and things, and this is all tied together. But now there's been some real concentrated scam efforts going on with phones. And this is kind of new because it's been mostly email-based. And some of these people are pretty sophisticated. So they have they're identifying a lot of cases people who aren't great English speakers, maybe immigrants, and they're calling and they're threatening and they're asserting that if they don't go and get a money order and send this money right away, that you know that they'll be deported and these kinds of things. And unfortunately, for somebody who has limited English capacity or has other reasons to be, you know, concerned about their security, some people are acting on this. So first thing people need to know is, you know, the IRS's first point of contact is pretty much never – it's never by email and it's never by – and it shouldn't really be by phone. I mean, that's
always correspondence, isn't it?
Yeah, and if you got a call from the IRS and somebody said, hey, you know the – and even if it was legitimate, I think you'd have a very – safe thing to say, I'm not going to start here with you. You know, I would expect that this would start with correspondence, and you know, until I've seen correspondence from you, I'm not going to respond to your telephone call. Now, we work with people in the IRS all the time because we're dealing with issues, and of course, we get phone calls. But in general, and as a matter of fact, I've got an IRS issue going right now, and the agent we spoke to, said, go ahead and email that to me. He said, but, you know, I can't reply. And I said, well, can you just reply and say you got it, you know, with no information? He said, I can do that. But they can't have any sensitive information. And really all we were sending was contact information for somebody else that they wanted to speak with. But the point is that if you get a phone call from the IRS, it's nearly certainly a bogus call. If you get an email from the IRS, it's bogus. Delete it. Permanently delete it. Don't just put it. You know, get rid of that thing. We should all be very, very skeptical of email that we get, even stuff that looks legitimate. And what they're finding with these people with these IRS phone scams is that some of these people were combining the phone call with an email, so they knew who they were going after. In some cases, they even had the last four of the social. So they had the true. So and there are ways people can get that. It's hard to get the whole nine necessarily, but the last four is available in, you know, a lot more ways, a lot more commonly available. So we need to be careful when we reply to these things, and certainly if someone calls you and represents they're from the IRS and that they either want PIN numbers or, you know, access to stuff, they don't ask for that. And so you should feel very comfortable in hanging up and say, I'm not going to do this.
You know what might be kind of cool? No, I don't know if the timing is right now, but at least next summer, bring in one of your IRS buddies, one of the local folks.
I don't think there are any local folks.
No. KINS, News and Information Times 343. We'll be back with more from Bill McCauley.
Sacred Heart Church invites you to join us every Sunday for our liturgical celebrations. Saturday, 4 p.m. Confessions, 5 p.m. Sunday's Vigil Mass, 7 p.m. Spanish Mass, and on Sundays, 9:30 Morning Mass and 12:30 Spanish Mass. Come and celebrate with us.
Good afternoon, KINS. News and Information Time. It's 3:45. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Bill McCauley. Bill, some of the other things that you wanted to bring folks' attention to?
One of the things was that the IRS just recently made a change, which is kind of significant for people who participate in flexible spending arrangements. And flexible spending arrangements are situations where employers will allow an employee to put, as an example, up to $2,500 into this flexible spending arrangement, which can be used for medical expenses. And the amounts that go into that account are expended on a pre-tax basis. So it's a real tax-favorable situation. The problem has always been with the FSA is that it's a use it or lose it. And so if you put $1,000 into the FSA and you only used $800, at the end of the year, you would have $200 that would just revert to the employer. In other words, it wasn't available to be carried over. Then the IRS said, oh, we'll give you a little bit of time, 2.5 months to spend it after year end. Now they've said, we'll let you carry over $500 of that deferral
rule
into the next year, which is kind of nice because that way it's pretty difficult when you're sitting around, you know, a year out saying, this is what I'm anticipating my medical expenses are going to be. I expect that I'm going to have $1,500 of costs. So you go ahead and you put $1,500 in and then you realize you only got $1,000. Well, it's kind of unfair in some ways that remaining $500 just goes back to the employer. And most employers really don't want to benefit from that. They're saving some payroll taxes by offering the program, so they're happy with it. And so I think you're going to see a lot of employers who do offer a flexible spending arrangement, incorporating this $500 rollover provision, which was done by the IRS basically, through their authority. It wasn't law. It was just something that they've done by
So is that a rollover amount each year? I mean, could it accumulate, or is 500 the maximum rollover at the end of a cycle?
500 is the maximum rollover at the end of the cycle. So what you would do, as an example, is that if you, at the end of 1 year, you had $500, you could roll it into the next year. If you get to the end of the next year and you got $300 left over, you could roll that $300 into the next year. But you wouldn't be able to accumulate the 500 from the year before plus 300.
But you're still able to take out whatever the prescribed amount is, yeah, up to the $2,500.
Right, and you can use those for medical expenses. And most of us don't have a problem, using those things up because, you know, the medical costs have gone up, and there's a lot of things, especially, as
so
I get
is
older,
our age, man.
As I get older, I find I spend a little more money on medical stuff.
Yeah, it's amazing how those prescriptions add up now, huh?
Yeah, exactly. I'm trying to regrow my hair.
Yeah, somehow dunking your head in that tank isn't working for you.
No.
Are there any other rumbles, grumbles that are going on? Because I would think, based on last year's experience, everything's going to be last-minute Harry and slamming everything together. It doesn't appear as if the environment or the culture has gotten any less contentious.
No.
Over the last 12 months. Do we have any concerns with any of the tax laws or replicating what happened last year?
Great question. There are some items we call tax extenders that every year tend to get dealt with at the end of the year. And you'll remember we've talked about the alternative minimum tax, the AMT patch, every year for the last 5 or 6 years. They finally fixed that as of January 1 of this year. So we no longer have to worry about that thing being patched. I would argue the exemption is still too low, but it does not require an annual patch. However, there were some other items that have been kind of extended each year at the end of the year that are still hanging out there. One of them is the deduction for state and local sales tax. As you can calculate your state income tax, you can calculate your sales tax, and take the higher of the two. Right now, that sales tax item would go out as of December 31, 13. Also, there's some certain mortgage insurance that qualified as mortgage interest. That's going to go away. There's an above-the-line deduction for tuition and related expenses that will go away. And then we'll be back just to having the tax credit. There are some talk about trying to unify all these education tax provisions, which is way overdue. It's way too complicated, and it would be a relatively easy fix.
Thanks for coming by.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
Easy to fix. You heard it here first. Join us tomorrow afternoon for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out and make it a good day. Hug someone you love, and see you tomorrow.